We will now formalize the previous example a bit more, and we will discuss the concept of null hypothesis significance testing, or NHST, which is the acronym. The idea of a null hypothesis significance testing is that we start by defining, we have some kind of estimation problem that gives us some kind of estimate, and we define two things. We define a test statistic, and then we define a null hypothesis. So we call the test statistic, we refer to it as a T, and then we need to have the sampling distribution of the T under the null hypothesis. The null hypothesis, or H0, is typically a hypothesis that there is no effect, there is no correlation between CEO gender and profitability, or there is no difference between men and women-led companies on profitability. Then we derive, based on statistical theory, a reference distribution. So how would the test statistic be distributed if there was really no effect? Then we compare the test statistic calculated from our sample to the distribution, and we can see that, okay, this area here gives us the p-value. So it is the probability of obtaining the test statistic under the null hypothesis given our sample size. Then we compare the observed statistic to get the p-value. So that's the idea of null hypothesis significance testing. Typically, this is done by a computer for you, so you don't have to draw this normal distribution or calculate the area, but it's useful to understand what's going on under the hood, so you know what kind of problems we face when we do this kind of inference. The simplest test, perhaps, using the null hypothesis significance testing is the t-test. And the idea of a t-test is that it assumes that the estimates are normally distributed over repeated samples. It was the case in the when we compare two means. So the difference of two means is normally distributed under when the sample size is large enough. And then we have the estimate, then the test statistic is estimate divided by its standard error. So instead of looking at how far the estimate is from the null hypothesis value of zero, we look at how far the estimate divided by its standard error is from zero. And this follows student's t-distribution. So that looks like a normal distribution, but it's a bit wider in small samples. The idea of a t-test, or this estimate divided by standard error, is that we standardize the estimate. So remember, standardization is subtracting the mean of the estimates. So here we assume the mean to be the null hypothesis. So we subtract zero, and it doesn't really make a difference. And we divide by standard deviation, in which case is the standard estimated by standard error here. So the t statistic tells us how far from zero the estimate is on a standardized metric. If it's more than two standard deviations from zero, then we conclude that that kind of observations will be unlikely to occur by chance only, because 95% of the observations fall within plus or minus two standard deviations when we have a normally distributed statistic. Also, so we compare this area. In practice, it often makes sense to compare both areas here. So we calculate this area as well. The logic being that it would be an important finding if the difference was to the other direction as well. And this relates to, or it's referred to, one and two tail tests. So what area we compare? So normally, if we only compare one end of the normal distribution here, this is called a one tail test. And if we compare the area, what is the 5% area here and here together? So this is 2.5%, and this is 2.5%, so there's sum to 5%. Then that's called a two-tailed test. Normally, when your statistical software gives you a p-value from a t-test or some other test that uses something that looks like a normal distribution, for example, a z-test, then it is two-tailed. So you compare both ends. And it's considered cheating to use the one-tailed test, because what the one-tailed test basically does, it gives you a p-value that is exactly half of the p-value of the two-tailed test. Because you have two tails here, the probability of the observation being in both either tails is twice as the probability here. So the probability here is half from what the probability here would be. The problem with one-tailed tests is that the standard is to use two tails. And if we observe a p-value in a research paper, we assume that it's made by using this two-tailed test. Sometimes, if the p-value is 0.06 and a researcher wants it to be less than 0.05, they switch to one-tailed test, which allows them to divide the p-value by half. And they present those as if they were tests from the two-tailed distribution, two-tailed test. That's misleading your readers. That's unethical. There are basically no good reasons ever to use these one-tailed tests, because this is more commonly accepted. And also, if someone wants to have the one-tailed test instead of the two-tailed test, they can just divide your p-values by two. And that's the difference. The p-values are very commonly used in research papers. So you see papers, for example, this is from Heckman's paper. You see these p-values behind statistics. So you see a regression estimate here. Then there's p-value less than 0.01 that is statistically significant. You see this NS, that means non-significant, or you can see p-values greater than 0.05. So for some reason, we have decided that the 5% p-value is the gold standard. And if you have less than 5%, then it's a good thing. If you're more than 5%, that's a bad thing. So that's an arbitrary threshold. So we have a paper could have hundreds of p-values easily. So it's very commonly used in research articles. P-value relates to two different things. So it relates to two different errors. And we have two things in statistical analysis. We have the population and we have the sample. We want to make an inference that something exists in the population using the sample data. So we calculate a test statistic. The test statistic rejects the null hypothesis in the sample. Then we say that we assume the null then doesn't hold in the population. But that's not actually always the case. When you get a p-value that is small, it's also possible that it is a false positive finding. So p is less 0.05 means that if there was no effect, then getting the kind of result that you just got would be, the probability for that would be 5%. So 1 out of 20 samples from population, you would be getting a false positive if the null hypothesis doesn't hold. So it's possible that it's false positive, but it's also possible that it's true positive. So the problem is we don't know. We have evidence that it would be unlikely that we would get an effect estimate by chance only. Then we conclude that maybe it wasn't by chance only, but we can't know for sure. Then we have, so this is type 1 error. Then we have type 2 error, which is false negative. Let's say that the null hypothesis holds in the population. And let's say that women-led companies are really more profitable than men-led companies. But for some reason, our study couldn't find the difference. So that would be a false negative. And there is the case that we say that we can't reject the null hypothesis. We can't reject the claim that there's no difference. And there really is no difference. So that's also a valid finding. So we want to be sure that we either have true positives or true negatives. The probability of false positives under the null hypothesis is, we consider 5% or less acceptable. So if we say that the p-value is valid, then it should behave as expected. So it's okay for the p-value to be less than 0.05, 3% of the time, if the null hypothesis doesn't hold, holds in the population. So that is, we have a conservative test. That's okay. So we want to make errors to be too cautious. But if our p-value was less than 0.05, let's say 7% of the time, then you would say that it's too liberal and it's not a valid p-value for the particular test because it doesn't follow the reference distribution. It's important that when the null hypothesis hold, our p-values don't indicate the support too often. Then we have another concept called statistical power. So this is a false positive rate. And statistical power is something that once we have a statistic whose p-value doesn't exceed a false positive rate, we want this test to identify an effect when it exists as frequently as possible. Typically, we are okay with 80%, but there are studies with way less power. So 80% power means that when there is an effect in the population, then in 4 out of 5 studies, we would actually detect an effect. The question is, which one is more important? So we are okay with, we're not okay with more than 5% false positive rates, but we are okay with 20% false negative rates because of 80% power, 20% false negative. Then the reason why we are so much more worried about false positives is that positive effects typically have some kind of policy implications. If we find out that a medicine doesn't do us any good, then no one is going to take the medicine. We continue research. If we find out that the medicine helps people, then people will start taking the medicine. If it's a false positive finding, then people will take medicine that is useless or could be even harmful for them. So false positives have policy implications much more often than false negatives. And that's the reason why we want to avoid false positives. We have agreed that it's okay to have a 5% rate. Hence, p is less than 0.05, but not more. So that's, of course, in some scenarios, if you have a really like a life critical thing, then you could be using p-value threshold of 0.001, for example. So 0.05 is not the one correct value. That's just the convention in many fields. Some other fields use smaller values, and you can use smaller values in an individual study as well.